Well, folks, I just have to feel good this morning because, once again, we have Tom Begich in the studio. Welcome, Tom.
Glad to be here, Mike.
And as we spoke a little bit before starting this recording and interview, there are so many things we could talk about because you have covered so much ground in your life.
Yeah, there's a word for that. It's called road warrioring. I mean, ground literally, you know, yeah, ground sure. Figuratively. I see what you're saying. You're telling me I'm old, Mike.
Well, I was going to mention you've got miles on you.
Yeah, it's what is it? It's not what's the famous line from Raiders of the Lost Ark? It's not the years, it's the mileage.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's bring this down. We're entering the zone of political campaigning that is arguably going to be in front of the majority of citizenry. Only the aficionados have to this point been following things, but whether it's the national level and the polls that will decide the fate of the 10-plus candidates that are going to make the first debate on the Republican
Party. Oh, they're going to have to make some adjustments there, but did we ever leave the zone? I mean, when did it stop? You know, I guess campaigning Trump's elections these days.
there wasn't a joke there.
May have been. I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's bring the focus to Alaska, because Alaska is the place, I think, is in many ways going to be of interest just as a way to keep from being overwhelmed by all that stuff happening in the rest of the country. If we can focus here, maybe we can keep our sanity.
Well, that's in a way that's true, but you know, Alaska has some national ramifications too. It's the only state during that Republican tide last year that managed to replace its Republican governor and remove three Republican seats from the column of their state House race. Admittedly, you know, my brother lost, but he won 21 of our 40 House seats in that loss. People like Forrest Dunbar actually won both House districts that make up Senator Kathy Geisel's district, which ought to send a little fear down her back. And here in the Valley, you folks put up a whole slate of candidates that you know, created competitive races. So, you know, you had competitive races on both sides, in some cases three people running in the general election. I think you're going to see some movement this year. You know, you've also, frankly, Mike, you've got a legislature with its head buried in the sand. And I think at a certain point, you know, as your, you know, houses wash away on the Mat-Su River and you recognize the need for government to come in and help clean up the mess that's made by not regulating and not having decent zoning laws, people are going to step up and say, maybe we do need a change. So I think it may be a little bit more different than people are aware of, and some of the patterns we're used to might change.
Well, one of the things that I have been noticing is that, at least over the recent past, when I read about the governor, when I read about his actions taken, they seem to be clearly stated, and the run-up to those decisions seem to be very open. When I see something about the legislature, and I see arguably less, at least at this summertime, it's kind of a little jump up, waving in the air, take a look at me type of thing.
Sure. Sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad when they do that. You know, for example, wake up, look at me. I'm the person who left, you know, at 5 o'clock drinking and, you know, went to pick up my kids. So it can be ugly and bitter. But here's what's really going on here. The governor, as you point out, you know, agree with him or don't agree with him, he's pretty upfront about where he's coming from, and he's trying his best to change that dialogue. But he's not a Barack Obama. He's not going to just fold the first time somebody shouts back at him. He's actually a pretty tough cookie, you know? Mm-hmm. So he's pushing back. Whereas the House majority and the Senate majority have this mistaken belief that things are just going to be fine. They can be, you know, do the same old, despite the fact we're suffering this huge economic decline in terms of oil prices and the impact it's having on our economy. There are some basic needs that have to be met, and you can't keep your head buried in the sand. And so I think the governor is setting a tone that legislature has to respond to. And the independent Democratic minority in the House gave a counterpoint to the governor's tone, which also held those majorities accountable. They are not used to being talked back to But Alaskans are used to talking back to those who aren't paying attention. And I think that that's very, you know, both the governor and the House minority represent pretty much that feeling of, you know, we're not just going to sit here and take it. There are things that have to be done, and we're going to step up and do it. I think I see that in the governor's actions. You know, there's an independent Democrat governor, independent and a Democrat, meaning him and Byron Mallott, and then independent Democrats in the House and the Senate. And I think that that balance with the Republican majority has caused some members of those Republican majorities to say, we need a more rational policy. We need a more rational way of thinking.
So what you're describing is a Republican majority that isn't made up of a row of clones. They may have...
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah, you know, on the right, you have Laura Reinbold, who stepped away from the caucus because they simply were willing to compromise. On the and weirdly, she would attend the Democratic House minority, independent Democratic House minority caucuses. But on the other side, you had a center group, about eight or nine of them. There were six publicly, and then eight or nine of them who signed a letter to the Speaker of the House saying, you know, we're not going to spend the dividend check to bail you out. You know, you need to negotiate on the what's called the Constitutional Budget Reserve, come to agreement with the House minority, and make a deal that doesn't compromise Alaskans, you know, dividend checks. At the same time, you need to take into account what you're giving to the oil industry in terms of tax credits, what you're taking away from parents, what you're taking away from others. You need to balance those. So there's about eight or nine of those members of the certainly of the state House majority that are willing to, you know, put a little pressure on the Speaker. And that's, I think, why you ended up with a settlement in the end.
Well, sometimes people say, looking whether it's at the weather or looking at the legislature, things are pretty much the same. They haven't changed very much. This year, I'm getting the feeling that whatever is at work that's changing our weather or our climate, it seems to be in our face more. And I'm wondering whether this is the appropriate way to look and say, okay, the legislature you're suggesting may have trouble doing business as usual, if there has been a usual. You've watched the system for a long time. How do you see it changing or evolving now as compared to, say, 10 or 20 years ago?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, 10 or 20 years ago, if you actually went back closer to almost 30 years ago, you know, we had a similar, you know, $5 barrel oil.
Right.
And we had a crisis that brought together a bipartisan majority in the House, which was led by Democrats, and a bipartisan majority in the Senate, which was led by Republicans, and at that time a Democratic governor. And they worked together to get us through some really tough times. And they actually thoughtfully did processes. They don't do that now. That doesn't happen now. It's a very different situation. When you say, what is business as usual, is it really such a thing? Business as usual for the last 4 or 5 years has been, we're going to tell people we're cutting the budget and we're strong on education. What we're actually going to do, you know, is we're going to cut education and we're going to take care of our own capital project needs with the budget, and we're not going to really have anything but lip service to the public. That's been business as usual. The thing that Walker does is he calls them out on it. Mm. And you know, because he won, you know, pretty much in an unorthodox way. He won the Valley and he won downtown Anchorage. There hasn't been a candidate who's won Mat-Su Valley and downtown Anchorage in a long time. And, you know, that's a cross-partisan, ideological bridge. So what he's basically saying is, you wanted, and I've sat on panels with the guy, and I know him fairly well, and it's like, you want somebody who'll talk to you like your neighbor. I'm that guy, but I'm smart enough to get the job done. And I think that's exactly what this state needs, because it really calls out this fake politics that's been dominating this system for the better part of 20 years. You know, you asked me about a 20-year perspective. I worked in the legislature back then. Mm. And I'm telling you, it is a different game. And it is the last game, Mike. It's the last game. If we don't get this right, there aren't a lot of options out there.
Well, I have the feeling that perhaps, as I've talked to people, that there was some surprise associated with the size of the budget deficit this past year. When they started talking about billions of dollars, it was as if it had been, equivalent to an earthquake or a tsunami that suddenly appeared because it was an...
Who knew? Right. Who knew that oil might be declining despite the fact that the amount of oil going through the pipeline has fallen every year? Who knew that the price of oil might suffer despite the fact we're producing more oil in America than we've ever produced before, in particular because of fracking in North Dakota and places sure. like that? Who knew that we might have all of the refineries producing so much fuel in America that we've actually filled all our capacity for storage in this country? Who knew that? Well, everyone knew. And the thought that there are people who will look you in the eye, who claim to have been our public leaders for the last decade and say they didn't know, is a falsehood. They knew. They didn't care to do anything about it. And here's what they did do. That same group of people fought for $700 million in tax credits that the oil industry didn't need and the law didn't require, while telling everyone out here that we had to, you know, tighten our belts, you know, roll up our sleeves and get some work done. You lazy Alaskans, get your butts in gear and do something. Meanwhile, they're giving $700 million away. They had to give only 90-plus million is all they ever had to put in the budget for those tax credits for the industry. They were willing to reward 10 executives for the oil industry rather than 300,000 parents they'd promised education funding to, you know, 40,000 people that they had hoped would get better medical coverage, and 15,000 employees that work to make sure that the rivers don't break houses, that the roads are paved, and that electricity runs. To me, that's outrageous, and Alaskans ought to stand up for it.
Well, we know that the governor in his first days quickly went out and said, I'm interested in everybody's opinion. And he took advantage of some form of technology to allow people to put together their suggestions.
That's right.
So you could do it in the quiet of your home, or there was a gathering in Fairbanks, and the people that went
That's
up
right.
there also worked in a variety of groups and came up with some solutions. What's your opinion about that approach?
It was used before by Governor Knowles back in the 90s. He did an Excel spreadsheet to help people give him ideas for the budget, which this governor has done. He did public forums, which this governor has done. Hickle did it too, by the way. Walter Hickle did it as well. And I think that's exactly the right approach if you then follow it up by promoting those approaches that people come up with and actually seriously considering them. And I think that this governor will. You know, Alaska is used to have one of the highest levels of attained education in the country when you averaged out people's level of education. And you want to tap that resource and see if you can't use those great minds to try to build a better community here. Mm-hmm. There are some very clear things that can be done, ought to be done. And this governor saw some of that come out of both the Fairbanks meeting and certainly from the Excel spreadsheets that many of us have done that show how you can actually balance a budget in the state of Alaska. But what's it going to take, Mike? You know, it's going to take, a reexamination of those tax credits. It's going to take probably some level of a personal income tax in the state of Alaska. It's probably going to take some kind of graduated cap on the permanent fund dividend check in the long run, but not a limit. And it's probably going to take a little bit of belt tightening still at the operations level. Not much, though. We're pretty tight now. And, you can't simply say we're going to cut capital budgets and no longer build anything in this state because you're going to destroy the economy as well. Government is an engine of growth, whether you like it or not, in the state of Alaska because we do not produce enough of manufactured and other goods to maintain our employment base. That's not to say that you should use government to employ people. What you should do is use government to ensure you have an infrastructure that year, and then the economy will build itself.
So many people have asked about the permanent fund mm-hmm. and the impact. I guess what I'd like to focus on is the impact it has on our psychology.
Well, there's two different words there. You know, there's the permanent fund and there's the dividend.
Right.
The dividend has had the Jay Hammond intended psychology of keeping people's hands off the permanent fund. And I'm a big fan of keeping people's hands off the permanent fund mm-hmm. because based on the performance of this current legislative leadership, I suspect they'd spend it down pretty darn quickly. So the psychology of the permanent fund is let's not touch it, let's not touch it. but it has purpose. So, for example, right now we use the earnings from the permanent fund to give ourselves a dividend check and to inflation-proof the fund.
Right.
But the fund earns much, much more than that. It's been extraordinarily well invested. So there's no reason why we couldn't take segments of that permanent fund, say, a $20 billion segment, and then use the earnings from that particular segment to fund a portion of government like education.
Right.
It would take a constitutional amendment, some thought processes to do it right, but it could be done.
Okay. Many people have suggested a percent of value approach to using that in some way as another.
I think percent of value makes sense. It's generally lowballed. At 5% of value or something like that to create a revenue stream. My difficulty with that is you create an open-ended general revenue stream. And again, what are the priorities that this legislature is setting? Look, we have a commitment in the Constitution to provide an adequate education to all Alaskan citizens here. That's actually in our Constitution. That ought to be a guarantee that we use. And, you can dedicate funds if you constitutionally do it. And that's what I'd like to see us do.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're just putting it in a pot and, you start getting harbors on Latouche Island again.
Right.
This ridiculous things happen when you do that. And I'm really hopeful that that won't happen this year.
Well, then the other thing that has been a bit different this year is that the legislature is sort of in a pause mode. I realized that there was a very lengthy session, and then there was an extra special session, and then sort of another special session. And I had heard rumors there would be a fall session.
There will be.
Yeah.
It'll be a revenue session. The governor, originally people thought it was going to be a Medicaid session, but the governor knew early on that he had the power from both the legislative legal opinions and his own legal opinions to expand Medicaid to, 30,000 more Alaskans. And he did so. And he did so after trying to work through the legislature. But he has told them and he signaled to them that he plans to do a fall session around revenue. And, whether he'll actually try to enact revenue and, resources or whether he just wants to broach the issues, I don't know. I'm not that in. But, that's a topic. I gather he'll be, in your studio if he hasn't already been here and you can talk to him about that
right.
then.
Right.
If you haven't already talked to him about it.
Okay. Well, this is an interesting time because the other shadow overlaying all of this is, of course, the upcoming election in 2016, where many, many legislators will be up for re-election. And
a U.S. Senate race, too.
And a U.S. Senate race there, too, right. So we got all of that going down, and it is said that sometimes people do things differently depending where in the election cycle you're acting. Any sense about that?
Well, generally, that's sort of a political rule of thumb that's the case, but it's not always followed. If a body becomes so convinced that they aren't subject to being defeated, they don't care about the cycle. What I think my hope is and my goal is to show people that there are competitive races all around the state, and it doesn't matter what party you're in, you better be affected by the fact that it's an election cycle. Usually you see a capital budget go up in an election year. I doubt that will happen this year because people are afraid of the money issue, and the price of oil has dropped significantly over where people thought it would be. 60 bucks plus or minus is now 40 bucks plus or minus because of the opening potentially of the Iran oil markets, the glut on the market that we've produced. You really are facing a very, very different situation. We're going to have to dip into the CBR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, and very likely even earnings reserve money in the long run. That's going to have to happen, and none of these guys want to do it. So it's going to be interesting to see what they try to do. I mean, do you slash education in an election year? A lot of people survived the cuts to education, so they might think they can do that. Do you slash health and social services? Yeah, maybe. What you want to do is really watch what they do pick and choose to cut. My guess is if there's a lot of fundraising folks behind an issue, they're not likely to cut that issue. And keep your eye on the ball on that one.
Sure.
But remember, in no instance should 10 oil execs that don't even live in this state trump 300,000 parents who do.
Well, of course, as that election cycle rolls through, one of the real experiences that I had back 4 years ago, or during the last presidential election, is that it seemed like the scale of the bombardment was moving up. And so these races, these statewide races for legislature, do they, in what appears to be an even louder time coming up here, how do you get traction when everybody is yelling at you?
Well, it's the media is changing. You know, the yelling is getting louder in part because the bandwidth that you're given is getting smaller. Mm. So you shout louder to hope to be heard, to hope to bleed over into other bandwidths, if you will. So when you think about that, yeah, the shouting's getting louder, but the voter, there are new ways to contact voters, some of which are old ways. Mm-hmm. You know, the door-to-door methodology sure. really does work in the state of Alaska, and people laugh about it, but you can be very scientific about how you go to a door. And at the same time, you have a one-on-one conversation with a human being, and that really, I think, is going to be more of what you see. Most people discount the shouting now. You can, you know, who shouts louder doesn't necessarily win the election. There are deeper resonating issues, and you have to identify what those are and where you stand on those issues. People will respond to them. Hopefully you're on the right side, but if you're not, you know, at least you're standing on the issue. If you ask me for examples, I mean, the revenue issue is clearly going to be one of them. There are some social issues that stand out, but I think those are really masks for the bigger issue that we face up here, which is will we or won't we have a future? And that's going to come down to economic decisions. It's going to come down to how we develop the resources we have, how we take advantage of those who are developing our resources, they're our resources, and then how we spend the money we generate from those two things.
So along with this is a question that pops up from time to time around how to have more people vote intelligently. And there are methods, for example, electronic voting, mail-in voting, other kinds of things. Do you think, one, that has a chance for happening here in Alaska? And would it be significant in terms of engaging population more?
Well, I'm a big fan of mail-in voting because I think it does engage populations more. Now 20% of Alaskans do vote early. So they either vote by absentee ballot or they go into a polling area and they vote early.
Right.
And I'm a big fan of that. I am not – I have an Alaskan libertarian streak that tells me not to support any kind of electronic voting, and I just don't. I've watched too many people hack into systems. You know, when you have, you know, 60 million government – potential government employees or government employees around the country's, you know, social security numbers held by people, the chances and ability for fraud in an electronic system are high, and there's no paper record. I'm a big, you know, I've got an old brother computer, Mike.
Okay.
And that brother computer has papers I wrote on it years ago that I can't access anymore because the technology for that brother computer right. doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. You know, without a paper trail, you don't know what you really got.
That's
true. So I do believe in mail-in voting. I think that works, and I think we ought to do what Washington State and Oregon have done, and to some extent California and some of the other states, and do mail-in voting. I'm a little more hesitant on electronic voting.
Okay. Mike Malevsky here, and I've been talking with Tom Begich, who has been rambling through the political landscape.
rolling.
That's true. Well, Tom, it's been fascinating. Is there anything that you think you would like to say at this moment that we haven't touched upon that's worth our listeners hearing?
I think I'd say to anyone listening, ask everyone that you encounter tough questions. Think about the future you want in the state and become engaged in making that future real. You know, we can live in a state that's Mississippi North with a terrible education system and a horrible employment structure, or we can live in a state that's Alaska as we dreamed it would be. I was born here, I'm going to die here, and I want it to be the best possible place, and I think it takes all of us to make that happen.
Okay. Thank you again, Tom Begich.
Thank you.